Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks.
Hey, we got a great show today. We're going to be covering identity. We have with us a special guest. You know him as Captain Identity. We call him Vittorio. Vittorio Bertocci.
Buongiorno, everybody.
Thank you for joining us today.
Doesn't speak a word of English.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great show.
Non ho capito.
We actually are going to run subtitles for the rest of the show, so hopefully you can read fast. Now, we're going to cover the news first, and then we're going to get to our feature of the week, which is a conversation on identity with Captain Identity, Vittorio. And with that, let's kick it off. Our first post comes from the Windows Azure blog. There is an individual by the name of Ryan Dunn. You might have seen him before. He is going to have an interview on Bytes.msdn. And the,
he already has an interview on Bytes.
Well, that's true. But
this interview bites. This go check it out.
it's a very intriguing, engaging interview with this particular individual who might be talking more or less about Windows Azure and deployment and diagnostics in the talk. It's very quick. Check it out. Next, we have a security white paper that we have released. I want to say finally because it's been in the works for some period of time.
Yeah.
This security white paper is what most folks have been asking for now for a while, just to document the processes on how security is handled, not only at a data center level, but internally what our processes are and how we document those, et cetera, et cetera. It's a fabulous read, gives you a good insight into what processes we have in place, and it should, if at the end of it, you should feel better about what we're doing. I mean, it's pretty comprehensive.
It's got some cool stuff like how configuration settings flow through the system
exactly.
And get to your application and your VM and can't get anywhere else.
And how we
packet filtering in the data center.
How we protect our certificates.
Yep.
The secret store, how that works, how those certificates get loaded onto the VM. So after you read this, you should have a pretty good confidence that we know what we're doing, I would say. Okay. Next.
A server is not a machine.
I'm going to go false.
This is false. This is just the title by itself, complete lie. A server is a machine.
Yeah.
But in the context of SQL Azure, when you go to the web portal and you sign up and you create a database under a server, that server, that's not really a server. It's not a machine.
No.
It's a TDS endpoint behind which can be all the SQL databases you want, the entire data center full of actual servers and machines can be behind that same thing. So the point is, you don't run out of space in that server. There's no physical thing that's resource constrained in a server.
Correct.
In SQL Azure. So this blog post tells you that and a little more detail about what it really means, but that's a common misconception because we called it a server.
Yep.
And so check out that post to learn more about it. That's on the SQL Azure blog.
So there is no cake, if you're familiar with the portal reference.
No.
Okay, never mind.
I have no idea what Ryan's talking about.
The cake is a lie. All right, never mind.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Like most of the episodes in the show, I don't understand a word Ryan is saying.
Go check out YouTube. The cake is a lie. Awesome.
Okay.
Now, Windows Azure, you want to try it for 1 month for free?
Are you
in the U.S.?
As long as you're in one country, the U.S., people who aren't in the U.S. are a little bit annoyed by this, but sorry, that's all we could do for now.
Or Iowa. We actually did restrict Iowa, I believe.
Right. Well, we the real U.S., not...
Yeah, you know. Iowa doesn't count.
Right.
So okay.
Other than Iowa, if you're in the U.S., you can try out Windows Azure for 1 month for free if you're not already on it and using it.
Yep.
You go sign up with this. This has the process of how you do that, how that all comes
together. And it's the first 500 to sign up every month.
Is that the deal?
Rolling. Yeah. So it's
not
unlimited free, because that would be crazy. And hopefully we can roll this out actually to more geographies other than the U.S.
Yeah, there's interest in doing that, but it's hard. There's a bunch of work, you know.
And the contest rules in Quebec really kill us every time.
Yeah,
okay. A security network drive for Windows Azure Blob Storage. So this is a pretty cool thing I actually saw the Windows Azure blog about, which is this Gladinet. It was the Windows Azure Twitter account, actually. Now, the Gladinet is it's a program that essentially abstracts over the top of our blob storage and provides what looks like an NTFS drive. But this isn't using, like, page blobs. It's using just blobs. So you can abstract over the top of it. In this case, you can set up an AES 256-bit encrypted drive over the top of your blob storage account. Very cool. What this gives you is just an NTFS view now of a particular drive that's mounted to your system. You'll notice here that you you just have a Windows Azure blob storage folder. And when you do that, you're connected out to our blob storage service. I would expect the latencies on this will be a little bit higher than normal NTFS storage, but hey, you get what you know.
Yeah.
Get what you can.
I wouldn't install Windows to this drive.
Yeah, try that.
but cool, a lot of people ask all the time, you know, what's an easy way to manage the blob stuff? We've covered some of the different tools. This is yet another way to do it and a kind of handy one.
Yeah. Now we have a blog entry here from I'm gonna butcher his name. It's probably, is it Johan or Joan? Jonies?
Jonies. I'm pretty sure that's right. Jonies.
Hey, this is the guy who's from LOCAD. Let's do that. How about LOCAD? Now, I think it was a couple points to point out in this one. He's talking about the reliability of storage, and he's announcing something that is essentially a snapshot tool that will automatically snapshot your blob storage. And this is for the case where users screw up and delete stuff, right? Now, we've had some folks in the competition, I'm going to go with Amazon, announced they have 99 points, some ridiculous number of nines, reliability. However, that is reliability, not availability, right? So what that means is once the bits are written to disk, they're not going to lose it except in a very infinitesimal case,
right?
Like a meteor strike. I don't know. We have pretty much the exact same reliability once we write it to disk. Short of a meteor strike, we're probably not going to lose it. Now, the point here, though, is you could accidentally delete it.
Right.
So
right. Here's the snapshot. This doesn't protect you from, I have a code bug and I just deleted the entire table, or user came to the site, deleted their account, they didn't mean to, stuff like that. And so we've actually covered this before. We covered a couple blog posts on the Windows Azure Storage blog that talked about this very problem and gave some sort of sample code that got you started on building something. LOCAD's gone and done something cool and built the whole thing out. So
LOCAD.snapshot.
So LOCAD.snapshot. Take snapshots of your storage. That way you can do rollback. You restore from backup, basically, when things go haywire. It's very cool.
All righty. Last big announcement is last week we had some new features being released in ACS, which is the Access Control Service. And the Access Control Service is part of the Windows Azure App Fabric, if you haven't heard of that before. Now, the ACS V2 in the labs environment introduces a host of new features. And I won't go into too many details, because I think since we have Vittorio on the show, we'll probably dig into that a bit more. But essentially, there were some features that were originally in the pre-CTP versions of ACS that by the time we got to RTM, those features were removed around some of the WS star capabilities. Those have been brought back in spades, and some other capabilities there as well. And we'll have Vittorio kind of clarify how all this works, I think, later in the show. But it's important to note that there is a new version of ACS V2, we're calling it, out in the labs environment today for you to play with. Okay. And with that, we have the master Captain Identity, and the author of the infamous Programming Windows Identity Foundation by Vittorio Vertucci from Microsoft Press. And O'Reilly Books, it appears, with us today here on the show. Now
yet, though, right? This book is not available.
It's almost available.
It's just a tease.
Yeah,
it's very, very close.
Yeah.
First week of September, ta-da! They should finally be on the shelves.
Okay.
But can you order it now? Can I pre-order?
By all means.
At this moment.
What are you waiting for?
I'm. Give me the laptop.
Here we go. Add to cart.
Add to cart.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
We just
bought it. That's Vittorio's payment for coming on the show. He gets the 50 cents or whatever
finally
out of that.
Finally managed to get a haircut. I have enough money for that.
All right.
What a good introduction to Captain Identity, Vittorio.
Let's start at the beginning. Identity is a big problem for folks running in the cloud. And I'll say identity is a problem across all sorts of application space, but it especially becomes apparent for people running in the cloud. You have your infrastructure on premises today, and a lot of times you have an identity provider like Active Directory working for you. And you have this wonderful capability using integrated authentication. Stuff just works. When you go up to the cloud, or you want to federate with partners, you want partners to actually work with your service and be able to authenticate and authorize them, what happens is you have to now share either a common identity store, or we have to have another solution. Q Vittorio. What is that solution that we can use in the cloud to help us with this problem?
Well, if I'd be like from your country, guys, I would say thank you for your question, but Europeans usually don't say that. So thank you for your questions. So the solution to this is actually surprisingly straightforward and is substantially a matter of changing the perspective in which you look at the problem. And once you do that, everything falls beautifully into place. And being Italian, I would probably just gesture saying, here, there is this, here, there is that. But I don't know if you guys would just follow the hand waving. So I suggest I use this happy white surface.
Let's go to the happy white surface.
All right.
That's what we call it on this show.
All right. So let's start describing in slightly more details the thing that you just mentioned, Ryan. Let's say how it works on premise. So typically, if those are the boundaries of your happy place, which is basically your network, and here you have one resource, be it website, level of business application, whatever you want, somewhere you have this cathedral in the center of your enterprise, which is what we typically, in our world, call Active Directory, but it could be anything else, like store of identities. And then you have your subjects. The enterprise is not a democracy, which basically interact with your thingies via rich clients, browsers, and whatever. So behind the scenes, what happens when you land, when you are requesting a certain resource, for example, using a browser, what happens is that at the network level, the system tries to govern what in Kerberos, which is the protocol that we use in this case, we call a ticket. And substantially, this ticket just decides the way in which you interact with this resource. And here, there is a center of all knowledge, which will make a decision about if you can access that resource or not. And this works beautifully until you are cozy in your double boundary. But let's have a slightly wider view, in which, for example, your boundaries are kind of, and I don't know if I will pronounce the word right, porous. And in which you have, guess what it is, a resource which is hosted in the cloud. Now, if we follow exactly the same procedure that we followed before, in which we land on the resource, now typically, first, we cannot use the same protocol that we were using before, because the protocol here lives at the network level. And here, instead, we are talking to a resource which lives far away, and that we typically connect using higher-level protocols, such as HTTP and similar. So there is really no network layer to speak of. Also, even if we'd be using that, if we'd be going back to our directory, well, this directory knows everything about what happens in its own realm, which is what's inside these boundaries. But whatever lives outside is unknown. At the same time, the software which stands in front of this resource and makes the authentication authorization happen doesn't really know anything about your directory. So this directory would not be able to actually allow you to authenticate. So what do we do? We do what we call claims-based authentication. And I'll get in a moment to what claim means. Basically, we move this interaction at a higher level of abstraction. We still do the same thing. Let's say that once a user tries to access a resource, we go back to this authority asking for endorsement, saying, yes, I can access this resource. But the main difference is that we use a protocol which lives at higher level of abstraction, something that does not depend on your infrastructure. And typically here you have various choices, which I won't describe in details, otherwise you guys will grow a beard as we go through that. But you may recognize a few names.
I don't know. Protocol. I look pretty good with the beard, I think.
I would agree. The SAML protocol, the AWS Federation protocol, the AWS Trust protocol, those are all higher level protocols which can first interoperate across different platforms. But above all, in our case, they do not depend on the infrastructure. As a result, I can have my resource on-premise. I can have it in the cloud, or I can have it at a partner resource, so still on-premise but not my premises, and it doesn't matter because in terms of capabilities, I can still do that. So what's the main enabler of this? Here we have various things that we need to put in place for enabling this blissful scenario. The main one I'd say that is here. You need to teach to your directory, to your identity provider, to speak this higher abstraction level language. Let's say that normally your directory speaks Kerberos, which works in your boundaries. Here instead, you need to be able to speak those standards. And on our platform, this is accomplished using ADFS 2.0, which is an extension to the server framework, is a server role, substantially, which allow you to issue what we say tokens. Let's say the artifacts which actually contain the things about the user which you need for authenticating. This is the moral counterpart of the Kerberos ticket. Inside this token, which is typically just signed XML, there are information about the user. Information that typically is what the service needs for doing its job. For example, which groups you belong to, which roles you belong to, your name, your age, whatever information makes sense for the business function here. What makes this information special is that it lives inside a signed token. This token is signed from this authority, so it cannot be modified by anybody else. And also, if you know the public key, anybody can look at this token and know, just know with mathematical certainty, that it's coming from this guy. As a result, this information, if you trust this guy to be truthful, you will consider them true. And that's what makes this information what we call claims. Those are not just attributes, but those are attributes asserted by an authority about a subject. Now, those tokens are typically in very standard formats. SAML format is the most common.
Okay, so before you go too far, you've talked about the SAML token, Vittorio. You say that that's the standard. Are there other formats that you can pass around, or where does this all fit into the play? What, do you have a choice? Do different providers do this, or how does the SAML thing work?
Right. So the SAML format is just like the most common format today for conveying information about the user, the claims. However, in the protocols that we use in this context, you can use any format of your liking, as long as the source, which produces those tokens, and the consumer, which is the application that will actually use this token for authenticating your user, understand the format, then you are fine. Mm-hmm. And the SAML just happens to be the most expressive format out there, which also give you very strong security guarantees because it supports many different signatures, it can be encrypted, it has all the info that you need for doing a very thorough check mm-hmm. of the token. But in scenarios where, for example, you're doing REST, you would be using tokens that are nimbler, so maybe slightly less armored, but definitely smaller so that they can fit in an HTTP header, things like that.
I see. Okay. So the that's just the payload format. When you talk about needing certain protocols in order to do like federation or delegation, you're talking at like the WS Trust or WS Security or WS Federation level, and that's independent of the payload?
Yes, that's completely orthogonal.
Okay.
Let's say that typically the protocols that you just mentioned have like one area where you actually put the payload. So if I'm calling a web service which makes A plus B, the payload is going to be A and B, and all these takes place in the headers. So in a place which is specifically designed for extending the capabilities. So that's the same place where you would find, for example, reliable messaging information.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, so let me just close the circuit here. We said that Here we have the source of these tokens. So you are basically teaching to your identity provider to produce these kind of tokens and to send them around using standard protocols. Then the counterpart that you need in this case is something that you put in front of your application, which can first initiate and handle all the protocol. Let's say that when a user lands on your application, you don't want to write inside your application the protocol management. Let's say that what you want is that the system will take care of authenticating the user if the user is not authenticated, just like what happens when you land on something on the internet. So this something in front of it is what would trigger all this interaction, what it would manage trust relationships, because when I am inside my boundaries, then it's kind of obvious from the context who is the authority, I believe, which is my directory. But if you go in a distributed context or even the internet, then every time you have to decide what is the authority that you trust. And it's very, very likely that you will trust more than one authority. So, for example, you may, if this is like a SaaS application, you may have multiple tenants. And you can also, for example, accept identities from the internet, so the famous Facebook, Twitter, and whatever you like. So the layer that you have here, which you want outside of your application, will take care of deciding from the context what is the identity provider that should be used, maybe even enlisting the user in the choice, like showing some UI. And then once a choice is made, in a way or another, engage with the right identity provider using the correct protocol. So in this scenario, it would be typically AWS Federation. And so here you'd just be bounced back to one page here on your directory with the necessary data about the sign-in you want to perform. Like, I tried to get to this guy, so I want a token for this guy, those are the claims that I want, and similar. And here, this segment is going to authenticate the user in whatever way the identity provider decides. Let's say that this is the owner of the account, and it will decide the way in which you actually perform authentication. So if this would be Facebook, probably you'd get your email and password. If this would be ADFS, you can use whatever system your Active Directory supports, username and password. In Kerberos here, you'd not be prompted. You'd just get a token silently. Or you can even use certificates. And whatever system you want, you use, the important result is getting a token. Once you have the token, you'll just send it back. And this layer, once again, will take care of shredding this token and trying to, how to say, understand in every possible way if this token comes from a legitimate source, if it has been compromised, if somebody changed it, if this token was for somebody else, and instead somebody is trying to use it with me, like think of a check which is for somebody else and somebody is trying to pay you with that check, that's the same. And then you will check that you have all the necessary claims, because you may have your bank which declares your blood type, which is not authoritative to know about, although sometimes you may think that they actually know. I don't know if you have the same feeling. And at that point, here you can actually filter the list of claims that you want. If you want, you can do all sorts of interesting magic. For example, complementing this stuff with info that only you have. For example, let's say that you sell books, and let's say that you are trusting a corporate system to actually assert the identity of their users because you give discounts. Here, you could keep a record of the last 10 books that this specific user bought. It's not something that their directory would know because it's specific to your app. But here you have a mechanism where you can enrich the context and add stuff to that. And also you have, of course, what almost everybody wants, the chance to perform authorization early. Let's say that those claims will have values, and you can inject logic that will analyze those values and understand if the user is allowed to perform a certain operation, so that if it's not allowed, your code never even gets loaded in IIS. Like, it is loaded in IIS, but it doesn't get called. So, and the beauty of all this is this works regardless of where you are. Let's say that you can do it on your own system, if you don't want to rely on the infrastructure. So, for example, you do merger and acquisition, and you buy a company which, poor people, they are not using Microsoft technology. And so somehow you need to cross this boundary and authenticate there. You can actually use the same technique inside your enterprise. And of course, this holds wherever you go. And this is like the high-level theory. In terms of what you use, this little thing that I drawn here is what we call Windows Identity Foundation. That's one extension to the .NET framework, which substantially allow developers to program against claims. So claims become a first-class citizens of your system, and also you are protected by all the abstractions which take place in here. So, for example, in terms of development, when you are building this application and you want to outsource authentication to this authority, you just go through a wizard. You basically just point to the metadata which describe this service, and the system will configure your application on your behalf. And then you of course, retain full control. So if you know what you're doing, you can put gloves, open the web config, and start changing the things you want to change. But if you don't, you just hit F5, and it works. And
that's beautiful.
That's pure awesome.
So let me check something here. Where you have your WIF labeled there now, let's pretend that's Windows Azure since it's sitting on a cloud. Is that the only way to do this kind of federation? Like, I'm trying to figure out how does this play together with ACS V2 that we just talked about as having new features? Where is that in this picture?
Perfect. You will make an excellent question. Now, the way in which you outsource authentication is the same. That's to say that if you are using those open standard protocols, then the way in which you make your application claims aware is basically this, regardless of the source. And in fact, you could trust directly your identity providers, let's say the entities that know about the users, or you could actually go through intermediaries. And this holds both on your properties or also using third parties like the ACS. Let me make a practical example. Let's say that you have a portfolio with many applications, and you want to manage the relationship at the business level. Let's say that it's a technical detail that you have like three different offerings, but your relationship is a business relationship with somebody. So here you would have all your app, and instead of trusting directly this identity provider, you could have an intermediary. Let's put it here, which you trust from every application, and that in turn trust this guy. So at that point, when a user lands on one application, gets redirected to the entity which is trusted by application, which is the intermediary. The intermediary here will do the necessary job for deciding which identity provider you should call to and actually do that, like dispatch the calls and similar. And that's like the architectural pattern. You can implement these in whatever way you like. A very, very compelling way of doing that is using one which is ready. Let's say you don't have to write it. It's already ready for you, already tested for scale, and above all, already has capabilities of talking many, many different protocols. And that guy is the Access Control Service. Opa. And by the way, one keyword which I never said here and I should is STS. So far I talked about identity providers. That's a high-level concept. It's like it's the job that entity is doing. The tool that you use for doing that job is what we call a security token service, or STS for short, which is a standard interface for doing all the things we described. So asking for tokens, receiving tokens, and pretty much it. So if you think in terms of a service orientation, that's the facade that you put in front of a capability here. That's your STS. So all these sources use STSs for issuing tokens, and ACS is no exception. ACS is kind of one STS for rent. That's to say that you can subscribe, like create an account, and then in the context of this account, let me draw it here, what you get is a set of these STSs, which are there for your exclusive use. Let's say that those guys represent these intermediate entity. And you have more than one because you support more than one protocol. In fact, in the new ACS, we are able to produce, that we are able to talk with WS Federation, WS Trust, OpenID, and I think that we still have also OAuth as we had in the RTM version. And this is the intermediary that you use. Now, ACS also have a way for you to define the identity providers that you want to trust. Let's say that in the settings of your account, you can actually decide what are the sources of identities that you want to use. And it has, of course, ADFS 2.0, because it's very straightforward, it's same platform. But also, and that's the interesting part, web identities. So you can say that you want to accept identities from Facebook, from Yahoo, from Google, and Live ID, of course. And those guys use different protocols. So they use Yahoo and Google, we use OpenID for talking with them. With Live, we use the Live thing. For Facebook, we use Facebook Connect. So that's all logic that you, if you'd have to write your own, you'd have to write. Let's say that you have to handle this protocol. Instead, ACS handles that on your behalf and normalize everything in a protocol that you like. So if you're coming from Facebook, for example, here, there's our little Facebook user. Tries to get on your app. Actually, no, this is the intermediary. Tries to get to your app. Your app forwards you to an access control service. The access control service shows you a UI which helps you to decide which identity provider you want to pick, and there are ways around it if you want to do pure, perfect single sign-on. And at that point, once it obtains a token, it's still a token, but in the format that Facebook is using, it will perform transformations on top of that. So here you can describe various rules that we can take the content of incoming token and extract from that content information and bring it as is, as a pass-through, or also process it. Let's say in creating something on top of it. For example, if here you have you're saving something about the user, you can say if the user has name X, then add, I don't know, spending limit X and a number. So that you can actually enrich this information or process it. And at that point, once you have this new set of information, you package them in a token of the format that your application likes. So you are completely decoupled from the origin. You don't care. For example, here you could use WS Federation and SAML, and you actually receive that SAML. And you are decoupled from all the possible things that can happen here, because if I'm coming from Yahoo, here the same process will happen. I will just receive different claims. I will have different rules for coping with that. But the result from the application point of view is exactly the same. Of course, you have a chance of knowing who was the original issuer, because we have a claim which says this is the original issuer. So if you have specific logic, it's not that that information is lost. What is no longer there is the dependency. So if, for example, tomorrow Facebook changes something in the protocol, it's our responsibility to keep track of that instead of being on your shoulders. Also in terms of scalability, like this guy is Windows Azure platform, so I mean, you can throw whatever you want at it, and of course you have all the power of a Microsoft cloud, as opposed to having to do things on your own, which, again, I repeat, it is still perfectly possible. Like, this is not something that you are forced to use in Windows Azure or even on-premise. You can also use it with your on-premise services if you want to open them up to multiple people. This is just one choice, one really great choice, but one of the choices among the many that you can do here. Here, the key is I can outsource authentication to others. Who are those others will depend by your capabilities, their capabilities, like you can match the protocols, and your business decision. So you are always completely free to choose whatever you like.
That was a fabulous whiteboarding session. I wish I had whiteboarding skills of Vittorio.
I wish I had half the understanding of identity that Vittorio has.
I'll go with the whiteboard.
I'd settle for that. No, I don't. I'd be happy to just know it myself.
It gives you nightmares, so better.
Well, I've heard that somebody has a book on understanding Windows Identity Foundation.
Yeah, if only someone had added that to their shopping cart so that I could check that out.
Well, give me your credit card.
Sure.
On the show. We'll just type that
I'll
in.
Just hold it up to the camera. How about that? Then you can do it from
home. Everybody can have a copy of Vittorio's book.
Why not? Right. It's on me.
Okay, so at every point of the show, we come to the infamous tip of the week.
Yep.
And this
scariest
week...
Scariest part of the show.
The tip, I think, naturally has to be about Captain Identity.
Yeah, I think Captain Identity shouldn't introduce the tip. That seems that seems clear to me.
I think we could be his sidekicks.
Yeah.
I think we know enough now that we could be his Cloudy Boys
We're
sidekicks.
Ready. Cloudy Boy.
Cloudy Boys and Captain Identity.
Yeah.
Here it
okay.
is.
Okay, so here's your tip of the week.
Tip of the week.
When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw a-plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw, a ghost heard in the sky.
Okay, great. Now, the tip of the week this week is from the sequel Azure Team. How to tell if you're out of room.
Basically, if you reach your arms out and you can touch the walls...
You're out of room.
You're pretty much out of room. This is in the context of SQL Azure.
Correct.
So it's actually a question about, hey, how do I know if I'm running out of room in my SQL Azure database? I actually saw a question on the Windows Azure forum recently where somebody was saying, basically, hey, stuff just stopped working. What's going on? Is something down? And actually, he was out of space in a SQL Azure database, and he didn't know how to figure that out because this blog post didn't exist yet.
Aha.
So now there's a blog post.
And he didn't check the tip of the week for, like the second show of calculating the size. Now, it doesn't tell you when you're going to be out because the addition to calculating the size is how big of a database am I currently in?
What's the current cap?
Yeah. So and here's how you do it. It's select database property EX in the name of the database and the max size in bytes, and it will tell you the current cap.
That's it.
It seems so simple as fake.
So combine that with the current size, which is here again, that query, and it's pretty easy to tell if you're getting close to out of room. So this is a decent thing to add to sort of your admin portal for your app or something like that to just show you the current size. You can also go on to the
if you want to programmatically catch when you run out of space too in your application. Here's how you do it: you catch the SQL exception, check the number for 40544. And then you should just drop the database, it says.
You have plenty more room.
But if you drop the database, just drop your tables.
Just drop everything.
It opens up a ton of space.
I've found that opens up. I almost always have just as much space as my cap after I do
after
that.
After I drop the database?
I found after dropping the database.
It's infinite space.
It's just...
All right.
It's bottomless.
There's also some more guidance in this about automatically increasing the database cap.
Because there's also, and I think we talked about, there's programmatic access to changing the cap as
That's correct.
Which means you combine all these things together, you can sort of monitor and automatically kind of raise the cap on your database.
Yep.
Might be a better option than dropping the database. That's up to you.
I say it's neck and neck on those decisions.
They're pretty close. Yeah, they're both effective. One's cheaper.
And finally, you can change the database size here. Here's the script on how to alter the database. It's extremely simple. So you move between editions, and you move between the max size. And remember, the max size doesn't actually, that's not what you get billed for. It's actually the floor, or should I say the ceiling, of the amount of data that you have under the max size. So to put that in concrete terms, if you had a max size of 20 gigabytes, but you had 9 gigabytes worth of data in there, you'd actually be charged for the 10 gigabyte addition.
Right.
But if you had 11, since it's a ceiling function, you would actually go up and be charged the full 20.
Right. So it's sort of the next highest.
Yep. It's a step.
Billable sort of amount, right?
Correct.
That's good. So you can always raise that cap, but the cap is kind of handy if you want to control that and you want to make sure you don't use more than a certain amount. Then put the cap in and use this sort of thing to monitor it.
Exactly.
Pretty cool. All right. So everyone should remember to send us tweets to @CloudCoverShow. Vittorio, are you on Twitter?
I am. And my handle is, it's a Vibronet.
We can put it in the little notes.
Yeah,
everybody send messages to Vittorio.
And Captain Identity.
Captain Identity. Yeah, he's at Captain Identity on Twitter.
Well, I'm sure tomorrow somebody will come up with that and start saying bad things.
I already got it from my phone while we were doing the show. So send us messages. Let us know what you want to see on the show. That yep. helps us decide kind of what to cover. Lots of people have asked about identity stuff in the past, and so that's one of the reasons why Vittorio was here today as Captain Identity. And until next week, thanks.
Thank you.